Happy June and happy Pride, celebrating pride in all of us. All this month, Richard Skipper celebrates those that are making a difference in the LGBTQ community. Never gossipy, the antidote to a sometimes hectic world. Now, here's your host, Richard Skipper.
Happy Wednesday, everyone, and welcome to Richard Skipper Celebrates. For those of you who are here for the first time, I'm all about celebrating. What are you celebrating today? I'm celebrating the fact that it's Wednesday. I'm celebrating the fact that it's June. It's Pride Month. Today, I'm wearing yellow because each day, as I have my guest, I'm wearing one of the colors of the Pride flag. And yellow stands for sunshine. Being out in the open, being your authentic selves. And I am so excited because I'm also celebrating Kelly Carpenter and Ann Steele. Now, individually, they are powerhouses. Together, they are alchemy. And I am so glad that they're here. Before we begin, I'm going to give a full disclosure. Next month, I am doing something that I never, ever, ever do. And that is that I'm taking a vacation. I'm going to Provincetown. And on my final night in Provincetown, you will find me sitting poolside at the Crown and Anchor, where I will be seeing Ann Steele in her amazing show. Music that she has grown up with, but she's put a new vibe on everything. Did I get that right, Ann?
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. I would like to say that it's nice to see you in sunshine yellow because you are a ray of sunshine.
Well, thank you so much. That means so much to me. I want to ask you, before we delve into talking about our past, I want to ask you both, we are celebrating Pride. What does Pride mean to each of you?
Do I go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Oh, okay. Well, for me, I grew up in a small town in Indiana. And I didn't know anyone that was out. I didn't know anyone that, I mean, even identified as anywhere on the spectrum. And I felt very, very alone. And once I moved to New York and sort of found my people, and it created this, and going to Pride, which I never even knew existed, by the way, going to Pride and having people be out and loud and proud and seeing what that looks like as a community and how important it is to younger people to see that bold, strong, proud, you know, event. We just had our local Pride. I'll talk about it in a second, but it means so much. You know, I didn't have that. I never had anyone to look at to represent what a lesbian would look like. You know, I had no idea. And so I think that's what Pride means to me. It means being out and loud and proud and showing the younger generation that it gets better and it's okay and you be you and all of those things. So that's what Pride means to me.
Well, before I move on to you, Kelly, I want to ask you, Anne, you mentioned that there were no people like you when you were growing up. When did you first become aware that you were a lesbian? And were you able to live your authentic self prior to moving to New York?
Okay, so I have to be honest, I didn't quite realize when I was young. Like, I had crushes on teachers, I guess, female teachers, but I just thought I really admired them. And that was probably also very, very true. But now when I look back, I think, oh, I probably had a crush on her. You know, I just didn't know that's what it was. And so I didn't, all through college, same. I mean, no idea. And I moved to Nashville after college, Tennessee. And I wanted to move to New York. That was my dream. And so I decided I needed to get like a regular job not a regular job. I need to learn how to wait tables because I was going to come to New York and be, you know, an actress. And I knew I had to have a side job. And, you know, my degree was in political science and psychology. So, like, what I wasn't going to get like a regular job, like a real professional job, because I wanted to come to New York and perform. So I started waiting tables at Chili's. You know.
Oh, and, I know it. Yes.
Yeah. And in Nashville, I was working at Opryland at the time, too. And I was singing in shows at Opryland, but I was like, I can't do this. You can't just not have a skilled job. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to wait tables, and I met my very first out lesbian at Chili's. And I was like, whoa, that's what lesbians look like. I had no idea. That was 100% like 100% like intrigued and obsessed. And all of a sudden I started to realize, oh, okay. I might feel something like about this, you know, in a different way. Like I was completely, I remember she was a bartender and I would come around the corner and just like watch her in the bar and see what she was doing. I'm like, that's what a lesbian does. Like, I don't even know, you know, I didn't know. I felt so, and when I say it now, it's so silly, but like it really, I was so uninformed about anything about gay culture. And so
welcome to my world.
Yeah, I mean, right. It's, when I think about what kids can see now and, you know, even characters on television, that even if you don't have anyone around you, you could turn on the TV and see gay representation and trans representation and, you know, bisexual representation. There's all kinds of things to look at now. And so, you know, I was like staring at this bartender, like obsessed. And that's when I suddenly knew that it was something else. Mm-hmm. And I was 22 years old.
Well, I was 21. So we were both on the same wavelength. And you, Kelly?
Well, I mean, in a similar way, I grew up in a small southern town, not in the Midwest, but in the South. And
where are you from originally?
I'm sorry?
Where are you from originally?
Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Okay. I'm from South Carolina. So.
All the way down. And I knew that I was gay from a very young age. So when I attended my first Pride festivals, you know, I had a very conservative religious family. And what I remember the most from my early years going to Pride festivals was seeing PFLAG march. Mm-hmm. And really like just bringing me to tears, thinking like, oh, you know, one day I hope that's my family, and knowing what it meant to those gay and lesbian kids that their parents were out there marching for them and wanting their rights. And that, I mean, to me, like all the, you know, look, all the amazing things that happen at Pride, like when you're in a place that your family's not accepting you, there's definitely a specific moment that you think like, it's all going to be okay. That, you know, people are going to eventually get there. And I think that that's my biggest memory of Pride.
Now, Kelly, you traveled a lot. I read that your family did a lot of cruises growing up, which, of course, led you into our family vacations. We'll talk about that a little later. But when you were traveling around the world, did you also, you're seeing people, obviously, from all walks of life. You know, I remember, you know, the song from Fun Home, where she, you know, was singing about the woman with the keys, ring mm-hmm. of keys. Did you have a defining moment like that as well?
You know, my defining moment, I remember, I mean, I was probably 14 or 15 and I was on a ski trip with a group of my high school friends. And the woman that was chaperoning us was the aunt of one of my friends. And she was like really cool and, you know, trendy. And like Anne talked about her teachers, like I remember having a huge crush on her. And I remember thinking, this probably isn't the way the rest of the girls are feeling. And I remember going for a walk by myself and I didn't know any lesbians. I was a ballet dancer, so I knew a lot of gay men. But I remember going for a walk and taking the turn around the pool. And I was like, I think I'm gay. And just remembered, like, it just clicked. Like all of a sudden I was like, I'm not like other people. And the realization of why that was just really came about, and it came about young.
Mm-hmm. And I want to ask both of you also, we talk about Pride festivals. Do you remember your first Pride festival and why that is important in a person's life? We all have that defining moment when we have that first experience, when so many people around us are supportive and are feeling the same thing that we're feeling. What was the first time for both of you?
The first time I went to Pride was in New York. So I probably was 25, maybe, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had a girlfriend at the time, and it's funny. So she and I worked together, and we weren't out at work. So no one at work knew we were a couple because she was so nervous about people finding out that we were a couple, but we were out in life with, we had all these friends. And so it was so, we had this weird life, you know, where nobody knew at work, but everyone knew in our lives. And so I remember going to Pride, and she had a lot of anxiety because she was afraid that somehow we'd run into someone from work. And I'm like, really? There are like so many people here.
Why would they be there?
if they're here, they don't have a problem with us dating. You know what I mean? And so I remember her being nervous and me just feeling like I don't want to feel nervous. I don't want, the reason I'm here is because I want to be out. I want my life to be authentic. I want people to know I'm okay with it. And, you know, I had a quick, you know, turnaround once I finally told people. I was like, be on board or get out. You know, you have a choice. And so, yeah, I remember that was something that bothered me. You know, I really didn't want, I wanted to live out and authentic. So, you know, I remember that. And then the next time we went to Pride the next year, it was completely different. It was fully, you know, she was 100% out and we weren't working together anymore, which is great. And so that really helped. But I do remember that. And that's something that stuck in my head, like that feeling that I don't ever want that. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Kelly?
Well, I remember I went by myself when I was in college in Dallas. I went to Southern Methodist University and I was in a sorority there and closeted. And I went by myself to Pride in Dallas and I sort of like, you know, snuck in just to see what it was like. And, you know, I just, seeing it made me sad that I was sneaking and also very excited about one day that my life, I wouldn't have to sneak around. And the first Pride that I went to where I was openly out and with somebody was in Chicago. And it was fantastic. I, you know, once again, I'll go back to the PFLAG thing. Like, you know, that always was my draw back in. And, you know, everything else is a party and it's great. But it definitely was the heart piece that meant the most to me. And we actually just, we're on the board of our local Ramsey Pride here in Ramsey, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And we just had our third Pride Festival. 2 days ago?
Monday, yeah.
Monday. And there's something about local grassroots Pride efforts that really are heartfelt. And, you know, we had high school students singing at our Pride Festival. Like, it was like, it just felt like it was families. And like, it just, it wasn't, look, I love the big extravagance of New York City Pride. It's a blast. But sometimes just the simpleness of a local grassroots Pride is really special, especially because we've all been home for the past year and a half. And so to celebrate home Pride felt really great.
Well, talk about that. Because you were telling me about what's happening. The trend is really now focusing on.
Right. I just had a travel big panel call that I was doing, and they were talking about Pride festivals. And they said the new big thing this year because of this are the local Prides. People are really trying to celebrate and bring their communities together in their local hometowns because it's where we've all been. I mean, nobody's really left home. So I think that it's special and unique. And I just encourage everybody to support their local Prides. I mean, do your local Pride and then go crazy in New York City.
Well, just this past weekend, NYAC started their Pride weekend, and they've always been about family. And I want to ask you, Kelly, was that one of the defining factors? You mentioned PFLAG in the genesis of Our Family Vacations.
Well, it's interesting because the start of Our Family Vacations was, you know, I was a LGBTQ parent, and, you know, you have to imagine this was, I mean, Our Family Vacations was founded 18 years ago. So there was a novelty and a newness in creating an LGBTQ family back then. And I remember my kids wanting to see other families like theirs. And we lived in New York City. So I can't even imagine what somebody in a really remote location, they've never seen another family that looks like theirs. And imagine what that feels like for these kids that are probably being bullied at school or whatever circumstances they're dealing with. And I went to Family Week in Provincetown, and Family Week is done by Family Equality Council. And it's a hosted week in Provincetown, and brought the kids and they were looking around and it was like their eyes were open. And that was the beginning of the idea of why don't we do something like this for LGBTQ families. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning.
Well, I want to ask you both. I mean, I've been around a lot longer than both of you, but a lot has changed in our community since we all...
You don't mind. We're having happy hour with you, right?
Like having happy hour with you right now. And I'm drinking out of my Richard Skipper Celebrates New York with Pride.
Yeah, I love it.
But when we all came out, a lot's changed since then. What are some of the changes that you both embrace so much? And what are some of the things that you miss from those earliest days? I refer to them as the hunger years, when you're first defining who you are and how you're going to map out your path on this path that we're all on.
Okay, can I start?
Yeah.
Because I want to start with the things that I miss. I like to go to the negative first. That's always my brain. The thing that I miss, honestly, and Richard, you know this so well. I remember when I first moved to New York, piano bars were like the gay haven. Mostly gay people and some allies, but mostly gay people. And we would gather, same thing with gay bars. And we would gather there because it was a safe space and we could be ourselves and it was musical theater. And you know what I mean? It was just this great space where we could, you know, hone our craft and be together. And it was certainly a gay space, mm-hmm. a gay spot. Now it is not.
It's a bachelorette party.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
I call it the American Idol generation. So everybody thinks, you know, there no one would get up and sing at Mama's back in the day or at 88 or at Rose's Turn unless they were fantastic. You know what I mean? Like it was Broadway wannabes and it was, you know, cabaret performers and everybody was amazing. But now just anybody gets up and then they read the lyrics off their cell phone. You know what I mean? Like, it, because everybody could just think they're a superstar now and that it's karaoke and all that. It makes me crazy. It's something I miss. I miss the good old gay bar where everyone's gay. And yeah, and now it's, listen, we all wanted to be like, we're just like everyone else. Yes.
I know where you're going with this. Yes.
We're not really like everyone else. We're way cooler. Do you know what I'm saying? So I do miss that. I miss the reason they were created, those bars were created so we could be safe together. And now we don't have to worry about being sick. Well, I guess we do actually, frankly, I hate to say it, but in the world of, you know, post the last administration and a lot of hatred has been embraced in this country again. I think it is more nerve wracking for people, but, just the concept that, you know, we wanted to be mainstream and, you know, now there's RuPaul's Drag Race and everybody likes drag. And, you know, I mean, back in the day, drag was, you know, in gay bars and now it's on mainstream television, which is great. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying something I miss is the traditional gay piano bar, you know. So that's my two cents on what I've been.
Well, I'm right there with you. I agree with you. And Kelly?
Do you not want to say what you'd like?
You can say
I'll say the positive.
Right,
there you
right,
go.
Okay.
We have come a long way. I mean, I think that like that's, you know, and you can say what you like about walking through a mall right now and everything's rainbow and, you know, some of us get bitter and angry and saying, you know, what are they doing for our community? And, you know, I agree with that in a lot of ways with things that I buy. I will never buy a gay pride product from a place that isn't doing something back for our community. However, to walk through a shopping mall and you see gay pride represented everywhere, it is pretty amazing. And I think if I was an LGBTQ teen, that would feel really affirming. So I think to look at the positive of being embraced, you know, we have marriage equality. We've got a long way to do about, you know, not getting fired at your work because you're LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we have a long way to go, but we have come a long way. And I think to focus on the positive of that and not be angry at the mainstream part, but, you know, we wanted mainstream.
This is why we're a perfect couple, because I go to the negative, she goes to the positive. You see?
Well, there's a little bit of both in each of those statements. Yeah. But one of the things I saw the other night on New York One, And then there's a whole movement I see going on now that lesbian bars are practically becoming extinct. The Cubbyhole, for example, which is the most famous lesbian bar that I know of, is fighting for survival. And they're trying to hold on to what it was. Do you feel that both either as a lesbian or even in gay bars, that these places are places of the past?
I hope not.
That makes me sad.
Ooh. It is sad.
Well, also, this is the thing that I have long been someone that most of my friends are gay men, frankly. We have lesbian friends, but our life doesn't look like a lesbian bar.
Can I tell you something? Excuse me. Danny, my husband and I, we've been together 31 years. And we have gay friends, we have lesbian friends, but most of our friends are straight couples that we spend a lot of time with. Yeah. And that, I mean, our lifestyle, if you will call it that, has never been an issue with either one of us. And yeah. I would think that it would be the same for the two of you.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because when you talk about our family vacations, I wanted my company to reflect what my life looks like. Mm-hmm. And my life does not look like all women. It doesn't look like all men. It doesn't look like all gay people. It doesn't look like all straight people. It's like my company, my community needed to be a reflection of what my life looks like. And it's not all one or the other. And I think the best community we could have is one where we're all just accepting of each other. And it doesn't matter.
But that being said, I would be so sad if those bars went away. Yeah. Because they are important mm-hmm. in so many ways. We've been to the Cubbyhole but most of when we go with our guy friends.
Right.
But I remember the Cubbyhole back in the day and there were no men there.
Mm-hmm.
Men did not go to the Cubbyhole. It was all women, all women.
And I think Henrietta Hudson has now sort of redressed itself and I can't wait to go and
see what Henrietta Hudson's back.
It's back.
And I think, I'm assuming it's a little more mixed than it was, but it used to be only lesbians, you know, and I think sometimes, I'm going to try to say this the most gentle way I possibly can. Traditionally, there were lesbian bars were very much exclusively lesbians because there were some women that didn't feel comfortable with men in their bars, right? Because of whatever their feelings mm-hmm. were. And that is completely valid. That's just not our life. So we always go to mixed bars usually because it looks like our life, and that's mm-hmm. we're going out with our best friends, John and Steve, and we're not going to a lesbian bar because if they can't get in, why would we do that?
Right.
But now I think everything's more open. I hope that the Cubbyhole stays because that is one of my original go-to bars in the city, and it would be very sad if it didn't.
Well, also I think about when I first moved to New York, I didn't know anybody, and I just was like, all right, I'm going to go out, and I went to a lesbian bar by myself and made some of my first friends that I ended up with in New York City. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I felt safe going. I felt like it was the right, you know, like to walk into some dance club wasn't really going to be the thing. But like a local watering hole that's a lesbian bar, it was a great way to actually meet people.
When was the moment for both of you, and perhaps you both have answered this, when you both felt that you were finally living your authentic selves?
You go first.
Me? Okay. Well, you probably knew sooner than me. Okay. I think
I'm gonna sip on my martini. Go ahead, honey.
I'm gonna tell you, I know when I came out to my mom. And that was huge and it was really scary. And I already lived with my girlfriend at the time, but my mom thought we were roommates mm-hmm. and we lived in New York, and my mom really wanted to hold on to the dream that we were roommates, you know. And I came out to her at a diner on 9th Avenue, and we were sitting in a booth, and I clearly remember it. And she, our dog is really being I remember she said to me, I said, Mom, I just have to tell you the truth. Sean isn't my roommate. She's my girlfriend. I'm gay. And she started crying immediately. And she said, I'll never have the wedding. I'll never have the grandchildren. Cut to, we're married and four kids. So anyway, but she was like, I've never... oops, not true, Mom. So, but she was mourning everything she had dreamed for me and that all that was going to not happen because if I was gay, I couldn't have a family. I couldn't get married and all those things. And I remember
for interrupting, but in her defense, at the time that this happened, these were things that you possibly could not have.
Right. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, that was like, I would say I came out to her in 1999, I'm guessing. So I'm having this conversation and her sobbing at the table and the diner. And, you know, of course, it's New York City. No one even notices. It's like everyone's just eating their eggs. So so I was like, wow, so this is my defining moment. There's no going back now. There's no, oops, it didn't happen. My mom never knew. So I'm not a lesbian. And she had a relatively quick turnaround. I think she had to mourn some thoughts that she, you know, at that time, again, believed wouldn't happen for me. But she turned it around pretty quick. And my mom could not love her and the kids and our marriage, all of it, more. I mean, she's like the pride flag carrying P flag.
She would be the captain of P flag.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's wonderful. I love that.
Of that. So, but that is, I would say, my defining moment, sitting in that diner in New York City on 9th Avenue, telling my mom that I was gay. And I think that was my no going back moment.
That's great. And Kelly, I want to ask you, when you went into the cruise industry, obviously your family were cruisers, if you'll pardon the expression.
They're definitely not cruisers.
But
in the vacation sense.
Yeah. When you first went into this business, did you go in wanting to have a business that you mentioned earlier, the cruise ship? You wanted to reflect your lifestyle, who you are. Was it important for you to have a business that reflected the LGBTQ, for lack of a better word, lifestyle?
Yes, and what's interesting about that question is that 18 years ago, we created this company, not only for a sense of community, but also because we needed to feel safe. Because there was, you know, the world's come a long way in 18 years for LGBTQ families. And I think over the course of time, what's transitioned is we do it not only to feel safe, but also for a sense of community. And by community, I mean, we have a lightness of entertainment. We want to be together. We want to have happy hours together. We want to watch movies together. We want to have seminars together. So I think that it was created to be reflective of our community. And everything that's brought on board and all the sensibilities do that. I just think that the difference is it's more about enjoying that experience and meeting other people versus I'm scared to do this on my own and I need to feel safe. And I think that that's really a wonderful growth that's happened over the past 18 years.
Was there a lot of resistance when you started the business?
No, I mean, it was the crazy thing is we were not sure, like the very first one, I was like, who's going to show up, you know? And my business partner, Greg Kaminsky, and I took every single booking and talked to every family. Every family has a unique story, which is really a fascinating piece. Mm-hmm. And what we came to understand was we may have a family of eight book, and it might be a lesbian couple and their child and their brother and his wife and their kid, and then the parents come. And so out of the eight people, only two of them are gay. But this is a place where the lesbian couple and their child will feel welcomed. So the rest of the family came to support it. So that's what it looks like. It's representative of what an actual family looks like versus, you know, we're all gay people and we're just going to sit together. And instead of bringing, it's a place where you can bring your parents.
Mm-hmm. But I want you to talk about, okay, so the first cruise was turned into a filmed for a documentary on HBO, and which Kelly was nominated.
That's right, for an Emmy Award. Congratulations. So,
but I want you to talk about, because that first cruise, the pushback that you kind of felt was when you would go into a cruise port and people were right. Not happy that there was a gay cruise coming. So they would protest in the port.
Right. We did encounter some pretty extreme protests. But, you know, I have to say that everybody handled it really, really well. And, you know, the truth is people are allowed to protest. I mean, they filed mm-hmm. for the paperwork properly. We knew that it was going to happen. The guests knew and they had the choice to go out and represent the LGBTQ community to this town who was protesting. And I feel like healthy, unviolent protests are, it's okay. And mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, it shows you the challenges that we still have in the world, and it's there.
But when you started this, did you anticipate those protests, or were you surprised when they started happening?
We knew that it was going to happen. And we went, we flew down to go meet with the head of the protest to see if we could convince them not to do it. And they had already filed for the paperwork and they were doing it. And, you know, the hard part was our ship was filled with families.
And children. So,
and children, and children and teens. I mean, even harder than the little kids are the teens.
Because they remember it.
And they knew what was happening. So, you know, that was probably the hardest part to watch. And the other hard part is that we were creating a safe haven for these families. But when they exited the ship, it was gone.
Yeah.
Not that they were unsafe, but mm-hmm. that they were going to be, you know, not yelled at, but, you know.
Right. I know, exactly.
We know what it is.
I mean, the truth is, we've because I perform on a lot of Atlantis cruises and RSVP cruises, which are also gay charter companies, mm-hmm. Primarily men, mostly men. We'll be like number 17 of women on board. We always get a number, which is fun. But we have had protests, some protests on the cruise ship dock when we come off the boat. And it's interesting to see. I mean, the Atlantis guys, they're like, they could care less, you know, they'll make it. But it is hard to all of a sudden.
I can just see them tossing their pearls before swine.
Exactly. They're like, girl.
Tossing their pearls, right.
It is a little bit like you're in this bubble for this beautiful time, and then suddenly it smacks you in the face, which is, you know, a challenge, and it's a little bit hurtful when you experience it, but the nice thing is you get back in the bubble and we have each other's support, and, you know, you do a show that night and everyone's like so happy to be together. And I don't know. I think we've come a long way.
Absolutely. Well, Anne, I want to talk a moment about your amazing talent, because you are a phenomenal singer. I'm a huge fan of yours. I cannot wait to be at your show next month. And you've got a great tour that you put together. But I want to go back when you first obviously started singing as a young girl and wanted to pursue this as a career. I could be wrong, but I'm assuming that's why you went to Nashville as well. Yeah. But when did you decide that you were going to bring this into your art on stage? The fact that you are openly out.
The first time I ever spoke about it on stage, I think, was my very first cabaret show in 2001. I was called Control, and Lenny Watts was my director, and Stephen Ray Watkins played the piano for me. He was my musical director. And I think that was the first time I ever talked about it on stage. I used to work at the piano bar at Don't Tell Mama, and I was not... Yes, exactly. And my first show was at Mama's also. And I wasn't really, now this is a weird thing to say, but in the piano bar, it's not like I was out, because you're not really out unless I'm talking about, I would get up and sing show tunes or mm-hmm. a pop song. You're not like, hey, I have a girlfriend. You know, you're not talking about that. You're working. So it was performing and working. So I had never had an opportunity until I did my first show to talk about my life, really. You know, you just don't do that when you're working in a piano bar. So, I would say in my first show in 2001 was the first time I ever kind of addressed it. And I was so scared to do it, because I thought, ooh, what if people don't, I don't know, like, what if people suddenly don't wanna come to my shows, or... I don't know.
What was the deciding factor for you to feel, you know, that you wanted to bring this to your audience's attention?
Well, because if you're doing a cabaret show, unless you're doing a character show or something like that, you're being yourself on stage. You're not acting. The goal in my shows, I'm just going to say, the goal in my shows is to be me and to represent myself on stage. So if I didn't address it or sing about it or talk about it, then I wasn't being my authentic self ever on stage. So I started then in 2001. And then every subsequent show after that, I certainly talked about it. When I, my Metro Star, I always call myself the Kelly Clarkson of Metro Star because I was the first winner. Metro Star now has lots of winners, but I was the first. And so I call myself the Kelly Clarkson. Anyway, when I did that show after that, Strings Attached was my big 2009 show at the Metropolitan Room. In that show, I very openly talked about my partner and sang songs and about it. And, you know, that was a big leap that year. It was much. And that's really where I feel like I kind of locked in more in 2009. So 8 years later, where I kind of found my real true voice as a cabaret performer outside of piano bar.
My husband and I are in two completely different professions, which I prefer. he is very successful at what he does. But the two of you have merged your individual careers into this amazing business relationship. I also want to mention to everyone, you have an incredible podcast. You had me on the podcast before COVID hit. Called I Love My Wife. How did the podcast come together? And what is the secret with the two of you? Because I'm assuming that you're probably together 24/7.
We are, especially during COVID, but everybody has been. But
so together all the time, just always together.
I mean, I think there's a few things about couples that, you know, are able to sort of be together a lot and work together. And I think that it's mostly about, we're not the same, but we enjoy the same things. We're very different personality-wise, and I think that that helps. We take on different sort of, not tasks, that's the wrong thing, things in our life. And, you know, we know which one does which. And I think that we just sort of walk in tandem a lot. And I think that that part works. If we were similar, I think we would need more time apart.
Ooh, yeah, we would. There can only be one performer. You know what I'm saying? You know. And also, she's so detail-oriented. She's perfect to help me with my sort of tour schedule and all of the things that a manager would do, she does for me.
You have an incredible marketing background. Your resume is off the charts, Kelly.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah.
No, well, it is.
I'm also going to say there is something to be said about, I mean, we laugh a lot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think a big thing in relationships is, I know there are things that you do have to take seriously, but some things you just have to laugh about it, even if it's like a nightmare. I mean, it's like, if you just have to laugh and, you know, be together and know that you're going to get through it together. And I think that that's a huge thing. I mean, Anne walked into a suburban house with four kids, and, you know, you have to have a good sense of humor about that a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, I was a New York City girl, performer, piano bar, you know, cabaret artist, and I moved to the suburbs with four kids.
Well, and obviously, when you love somebody, you're willing to go the distance. Was it an easy transition for you to go from that world to this world?
No, I would say no. the whole part about the kids was easy. That was easy for me because I never dreamed I would have kids. When I was a child, I used to tell my mother, don't plan on having grandchildren because I'm not having any. It was just not my thing.
Long before the diner conversation. She should
have known. She should have known.
Slight heads up.
Right. So, but yeah, it never was an issue. I met the kids. I've known the kids. I was on the second ever Our Family Charter and performed on every single one. We were not a couple and we were just friends, and I worked, and that was work, and it was amazing. And I knew them for years, but I watched the kids grow up through those years. And so they knew me, I knew them, but you know, all of a sudden you're going to be possibly a stepmom. And the kids were 100% on board. They were obsessed. And I was I loved them so much right away. It was just really easy and fun with them. And they were, at that point, 7, 10, 12, and 14. So, you know, I mean, they weren't babies, which was great.
And the 7-year-old is graduating from high school in this month. So,
yeah, I have a question that just popped up that I want to ask you. It says, hi, I'm from an online forum where our forum banner is not changed by anti-LGBT moderators. What can I do for our culture? I don't absolutely understand the question, but maybe both of you do. You both see
glasses on. Online forum banner is not changed by anti.
Well, that would be sort of a good thing that it can't change, right?
Yes. I would think so.
Yeah. I mean, understanding it correctly, I think that's, a good thing. Mm-hmm. What can I do for our culture?
Maybe clarify
this, Agatha, and we'll be able to respond.
I can tell you a little bit about the podcast if you'd like.
Yes. Talk about how that started.
So, Anne and I were regulars on the Derek and Romaine show when they were on Out Q on Sirius Radio. They were like one of the mainstays of that that channel. And sadly, that channel folded.
Do you know why that channel folded? Because there was so much great programming on that.
Great
channel.
Content on it.
It was Sirius, I think, shut it down.
Yeah. They just didn't want to pay for it anymore, I guess. But, you know, one thing I love about Derek and Romaine is they are such go-getters in that they were like, all right, we're going to lick our wounds for maybe a day, and then we're going to come up with a new plan. And what they wanted to create was the new voice for our community through podcasting. And
which is really the new thing. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I mean, who would have thought? They were definitely on the on the cutting edge then. And, of course, I'm like, what's a podcast?
No.
The beginning. I don't know.
And we were behind.
And so we had been guests on their shows numerous times. And all of a sudden I got an email from Romaine, and she was like, can Derek and I set up a call with you? And when we had done their show, it was either me and my business partner, Greg, talking about our family, or Anne would go on and talk about her tour. And I was like, well, let me see when Greg's available. And she was like, no, I want to talk to you and Anne. And I was like,
We were like, what?
That's weird. But anyway, so we set up the call, and they pitched this idea that they thought our lives were, you know, interesting in the fact that half of our life we didn't have kids and half the life we did. And when we didn't have our kids,
meaning we still have the kids, they're just with their other
50%
parents.
50% custody.
Yeah, so right.
When we didn't have the kids, we would be out touring for Anne or doing one of my trips. Like, our lives are like this big chaotic craziness. And the next thing you know, we're back home taking the kids to school. So they thought that that would make an interesting podcast. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, will it be interesting? And, you know, she was like, well, think about it. And so we thought about it.
And we thought, we were sort of thinking, like, we also know so many amazing performers, whether they be comics or Broadway stars or cabaret entertainers or activists or, I mean, any number of areas in entertainment, or not just entertainment. We've had lots of, now we have people that are own a winery, two gay men that own a winery in Napa. So it's grown so much, but we were like, we have so many amazing friends. We could have guests, and we could literally get our friends to come on and be our guests. And so that's, I guess.
So we did a pilot and
with Judy Gold.
Judy Gold was our first guest. And thank goodness it was Judy Gold, because we were slightly tragic.
Yeah, we were a little, we were like
robots.
And the crazy part is, like, I'm a performer, so I should have been better, but I wasn't. I was out of my element. I wasn't singing. I wasn't, yeah. And we were like, it was bad.
And so, afterward, Judy Gold came on and, you know, she was hilarious and saved us. But then we sat down and
start driving the bus. I have to ask, and I mean that in a complimentary way. So
we had to grow into it. I mean, like, we just had to get comfortable with ourselves and realize that it doesn't have to feel so structured.
Yeah.
And that's what we learned to do. I mean, and that was over 4 years ago. So like, you know, we are in our, no, it's four years ago. Yeah, fourth season. And I mean, if you listen to that first one versus what we're doing now, I mean, it's like, you know, night and day, but it definitely, we stayed away from politics because there was enough politically going on in the world at the time. And we wanted to be light and levity, and we stick to travel, music, cocktailing, kids, just lifestyle things that are fun. We talk about our lives and what shows we've seen and all of that stuff. I mean, during COVID, life from our sofa became a little complicated.
It was,
well, I was like, what do we do today, honey? Well,
we were basically kvetching about
we went to
how
the grocery
bad,
store.
How bad everything was.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, when we first started hearing about COVID, it was March 12th last year when everything shut down. Who got the first casualty out of you two?
Oh, well, I mean, what's interesting is like when it shut, I was hosting a tour in Thailand and we landed in on March 3rd and we were the last flight from Seoul, Korea to LAX and none of our guests got ill, which we were very fortunate. Everybody took precautions. We knew that it was out there. So there was a lot, you know, we wore masks and we did everything we were supposed to do. But we had no idea it was going to reach the levels that it actually reached. And we hunkered down. And, you know, once that happened,
we had no one in our family got it. And we had,
in the beginning,
right. Until January 31st of 2021, we both got it.
Yes, we both got it.
Wow.
So we're going to blame it on our
family. We both had it at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Well, I went as getting it first, and I think I got it. But we have a teenage daughter. I think, you know, I mean, it's the only way because we weren't doing anything different in our lives, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was surprised, needless to say. And I was, you know, I mean, I have to say, I felt like it's so weird, the COVID shame. Like, I was the first one to get sick, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm bringing it into my house. And how did this happen? And, you know, and then, you know, Anne's a singer, and I was like, oh gosh, what if it affects her ability to sing? Like, you know, just the range of emotions. And, you know, ultimately the truth is it doesn't matter how you got it, you got it. And
but she also, you were like immediately quarantined up in our master bedroom alone, far away from us, in the upstairs bedroom. And I was just in the house with the kids, and we just kept going with life. And I was riding the Peloton every day, and I was fine. And I was like, I think I didn't get it. I'm amazing. Even though we slept like literally in the same bed the night before she had a fever. So of course, eventually I was going to have it. So 4 days later, her test came back. Her PCR came back 4 days. It was taking at that time. And it came back positive. And she texted me, and I was in the guest room, and I woke up, and I was like, I was like, everybody, get your mask on, get in your cars. We're all going separately. So in case somebody doesn't have it, we're all going to go. We went and got our tests and immediately positive.
Wow.
So the kids went to their other parents' house and stayed there because both of them tested negative. And we both just got, I didn't even break a fever.
I mean, look, we were lucky. I mean, I was sicker than Anne, but honestly, based on what we've had friends go through, we were lucky. And then we were lucky to be able to have each other. I was in the room by myself for 3 days.
4 days.
4 days. And it's lonely in there.
No, I can imagine. Well, let's talk about happier times. We are re-emerging now.
Yay!
And you have an amazing tour coming up. You're going to be, is it the tour starting in Rehoboth Beach?
Yes.
At the Blue Moon. I love performing there. The audiences are fun. I love performing in these areas that you're going to, you know, Provincetown, Crazy Cox in London.
Yes.
How did you put this tour together?
Well, basically we've been trying to figure out, it's been hard because the rollout is weird. People don't know if, I guess you would know better. They're like, we don't know what the protocols are, so we can't really launch it. We can't tell them yet. We can't post it yet. We can't put the tickets up. But now we're really getting to a place where they have all the protocols in place. So that's what we did gradually, just try to fit it in and go along. Now we have a New York City winery On July 16th.
And about to launch a Boston City Winery and a Philadelphia City Winery. I mean, she's a big, do you want to talk about City Winery?
City Winery, I love. Joe's Pub is my home. It has always been my home in New York City. But City Winery, I am obsessed with what they do. They are so artist-driven. Their sound and their experience, because the food and the wine is so good. And I have played City Winery Atlanta, Nashville, Chicago, Boston, New York City. Is that it?
Philly.
Yeah, Philly. So all of these, you could just basically tour these venues and it's, 100% the music is great and you could see any artist.
I mean, we just will be like, we have a night free. Let's just go. It doesn't matter who's playing. You know, they're going to be fantastic.
We never even know the people usually. And we just go and see a show because we know how they curate the art there. And so I'm excited to play there. So we've just been trying to figure out with COVID. I'm doing a Susie Mosier show. She's back at Birdland.
Oh, that's great. Great.
Starting July 6th. So her first show back, we're doing it upstairs this time. And so I'm going to be a guest on that. So it feels good to have.
It feels great. I will say this. And then I've got a lightning round of questions that I want to ask you. Questions that you send me. But I want to give a big shout out to Rick Murray at The Crown. Last October, we got away. I mean, it was a long summer, let's face it. And we got away and we went to see Mary Callanan at The Crown. And their protocols were amazing. Yeah. And I felt taken care of. I felt safe. The Crown is one of my favorite places in the world. So everybody, join me in Provincetown. I will be there July 17th through the 22nd, and I leave on the 23rd, but on the 22nd, I have my tickets.
Yay!
I mean, listen, I played The Crown last summer, and it's on the waterfront. It's around the pool. It's on the beach. It's so gorgeous. And
when were you there, may I ask, last year?
I was there in July.
It was July, but I can't remember the exact date.
Yeah.
We were there Columbus Day weekend, and it was cold. Right on the beach.
It was nice and breezy and warm when we were there.
Yeah.
Now, these are just questions that people send me randomly. They're not specifically for either one of you. Right. What are the circumstances in which you most resist change in your life?
I am someone that always, she will admit this, I always say no to everything. So normally someone says, do you want a guest on this show? Do you want to do this? I always say no. And she'll be like, she read a book.
Shonda, you didn't say no to me though, did you?
No, but she,
was like your nicest book.
She made the Shonda Rhimes book, The Year of Yes.
And
you're supposed to say yes for a year to everything. And don't stop yourself. Don't limit yourself, because that's what we do. We put these weird restrictions on ourselves and say, I don't want to do that. It'll make me nervous, or I'll be scared, or I won't be good. Mm-hmm. Say yes for a year. And so that's when I put limits. I used to put limits on myself all the time. I would say no, because I'm like, what if I'm not good at it? What if we're not good at a podcast 4 years later? I'm just saying, take a year of yes. Stop saying no. That's my
And I have that book. It's a great book. Kelly?
Mine would be, I feel like, I don't know.
Do you ever put limits on yourself?
Oh, all the time. But I feel like, you know, mine is very similar. Like, I do not like public speaking, and I get asked to do a lot of public speaking. There's not a lot of out lesbians in travel. And I get asked to do it a lot. And it was this book that actually was like, you know what? I'm going to, you know, say yes and know that I'm going to not be absolutely the best at it, which is okay. Like, I feel like you also have to be forgiving of yourself. Like, I'm going to be pretty good, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, my other thing is like, I'm not very flexible. Like, I like to make a plan, and if that plan doesn't stick, I get a little rigid. So, you know, my goal, like on our honeymoon, Anne made me promise that I wouldn't make like a daily agenda for us, that she would just be like, this is what we're doing today. And I had to be okay with it. And it actually felt so freeing. I actually took naps. Mm-hmm. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like a schedule and an itinerary, which makes me good at my job, but in life, I need to be more flexible.
That's great. What was the, when in your life have either of you felt the loneliest?
Oh. Whew. I mean, I would say when I was in high school and college and out and closeted, I mean, and not being accepted by my family, I felt incredibly lonely. And I was lucky to have some friends to lean on. And I think that, you know, anybody that's feeling that, to feel like you can open up to your friends, because it does make a huge difference. But to feel like I was alone and, you know, not really seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, I think was probably the saddest and loneliest for me.
Mine was probably when I told my mom and she wasn't accepting of it right away when I told her I was gay, because my mom and I were always super connected and I felt super lonely that I didn't have like my mom on my side for a while. And that was super lonely. But, you know, now she's just really on my side all the time. So I'm not lonely anymore.
And what was your favorite toy as a little girl?
Oh, My Little Pony.
Ah,
I'm obsessed with My Little Ponies. I had a whole stable of all the My Little Ponies. All the I love My Little Ponies.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this sounds so weird. Mine was Baby Alive. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, of course.
What's Baby Alive?
Like, and what's crazy is I ended up having four kids, so it should have been a
having a baby.
Like you feed it and it poops. Like,
oh, what?
Yeah.
And for each of you, what is the one thing that you most would love to abolish?
Oof. How long of a list can we do?
As long as you want.
I mean, hate. I mean, it makes me crazy. Even people that are, you know, like-minded to us, what's happening right now, even when you see somebody post something on Facebook, let's say, and then everyone gets so angry. There's a lot of hate and anger right now, and it makes me so sad. You know, people are, there's so much work to do in this world, and to be wrapped up in hate, mm-hmm. It's not healthy. It's not healthy for a human to feel so much hatred. And so I would love to get rid of that feeling, what that feels like, and watching people right now. Sometimes it's hard. I have to like kind of mute people so I don't have to see their posts, because it's just so hurtful to watch people be so angry and so hateful.
And it's like divisive. And so then we're not able to see what connection we have together. Yeah. And I think what, you know, look, these past, you know, 4 or 5 years it's made us a divisive country. And I think that what we're missing is seeing the humanity in each other. And, you know, the hate would be a great thing to abolish.
Yes, I totally agree. What is your strongest emotion for either of you?
Strongest emotion.
Oh, interesting. Hold on.
Mine would be, I think my strongest emotion is love. And that's kind of a basic thing to say, but because I have been very lucky to have my wife share her family with me. I get to have these amazing kids and watch them grow. And now we have 2 grandchildren, and eventually we're gonna have more. And how much I love them, I never knew what that felt like on that level. You know, I've loved people in my life. I've loved my parents, my sibling, you know, but to love, and I love her, of course, more than anything, but to love another human on a level that you love your children is really something extraordinary. So I would say that that is something that is very special to me and that was gifted to me by my wife. So
that's beautiful. Ditto. That's beautiful.
You say ditto?
I said ditto.
Oh my God.
What is the most, when did you need the most perseverance in your life? And that's going to be my final question for both of you.
Okay, well, mine was when I was trying to decide if I was going to leave officially the piano bars and focus on taking my show on tour and really committing and not having the fallback of making money in the piano bars. And we knew it was, I think I had just had a birthday, a big birthday, possibly. I think I turned 40.
Yep.
And we were sitting, I had a fancy dinner. Someone gifted me a fancy dinner for my birthday. And we were sitting there having dinner. And Kelly said, make a list. Let's make pros and cons. What do you want? What do you really want your life to look like? What do you want your career to look like? And so we made a list. And that was the time when I said, when I knew that I had a partner that was going to stand behind me and believe in me enough that I could let go of my safety net of piano bars and that I could jump and just do the go on the road and make CDs and make music and not have to worry about that. And that, I think, was that was a hard year to get through that first year. She was like, the first year we're going to lose money. The second year, we're going to break even. The third year, we're going to make money. And that was how she sort of talked me into it. And it was, again,
it was a very memorable evening.
Yeah.
That's great. That's wonderful.
A lot of perseverance, I would say.
Yes.
And you, Kelly?
You know, mine, I think, would be just knowing that, you know, through difficult relationships, persevering and taking care of myself and learning from those times that I could find real love and companionship. And, you know, I found that with Anne in a way that if I didn't just keep pushing forward would have never happened. And not giving up and knowing that somebody was going to love me in the way that she loved me and love our kids in the way that she loves our kids. I just feel like, you know, it was just about saying, I'm going to keep stepping forward and not backward. And it, you know, I would say that would be my recommendation to anybody, you know, no steps backward, only forward. And, you know, there's a lovely light at the end of the tunnel.
That's great. And speaking of light at the end of the tunnel, will I see you in Provincetown?
Oh, we will be there.
We will be there.
With our kids.
You will be a hug from both of you.
I know. And I want you to wear your bright yellow sunshine shirt.
Okay. I love you both so much. The fact that you have I Love My Wife podcast, I wanted to rise to the occasion today, and hopefully I did. I love you both so much. I want to thank everybody for being here. I know I can speak for both Kelly and Anne when I say this. You could have been anywhere else for the past hour, and the fact that you chose to spend it with us is something that I'm sure none of us take for granted. I certainly don't. So yeah. Thank you for being here. If it was your first time here, please subscribe to Richard Skipper Celebrates on YouTube. Hit the like button, leave a comment on YouTube. You both know that's what helps with the ranking. And that's how people will find this particular show. I also end every show by telling everyone to go out and do something nice for somebody else without expecting anything in return. Go to your Facebook friends list, and the ninth name that pops up today, reach out to that person with a phone call. Not an email message, not a text message, not a private inbox message, but an actual phone call. And let those people know what they mean to you. And as a dear friend of mine says, we're all in this together, but we're not in the same boat. And Kelly, you know all about boats, but trust me when I tell you this. If you're going to go out on a boat, make sure that you bring a skipper along. So think about that. So I'm actually going to leave the screen, and I'm going to give you both the final word. Anything that you want to expound upon that we talked about today, anything that we didn't talk about that you wish we had, or just any message that you want to put out to everyone who's watching right now. And thank you both for the gifts that you give to the world, that you will continue to give to the world. And your body of worth is always celebrated. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard, for having us.
Well, I guess this is our big closer.
I don't know. I need to tap dance or something.
No tap dancing. Okay. Richard, thank you so much for having this beautiful celebration of pride and featuring people that are doing something great in our community. And we absolutely adore you. You can always go check out I Love My Wife podcast. We have an episode with Richard that you can find, which is absolutely lovely. He's so charming and lovely.
He's adorable. And also, don't miss one of Anne's shows. Go to Anne's.
Or one of our family vacations, cruises.
We're full of it.
Yeah. AnneSteele.com. Anyway, thank you for watching the show. And please share it. Share it with your friends because he's doing these all the time. You have to.
And I'm going to do the Facebook friend thing. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I like that too.
I love that. I don't know. Don't take any minute for granted. Enjoy life, everybody.
Yes. Bye.